and Ito just behind him. Reese took rear security, giving him the best situational awareness. Had this been a sanctioned mission with the support apparatus that accompanies a special mission unit operation, Ito would have had a small camera attached to his harness, allowing Devon to see what was going on inside without committing assaulters. In this case, they didn't know how many people were in the target building, and they needed to get to Hannah and Rafe before the alert went out that might get them killed. This was an in extremis hostage rescue operation. Unlike a capture kill, they would bypass potential threats to get to the hostages. A dog in this situation could end up being a liability, but with only four operators, they needed Ito to lead them directly to the hostages. Reese squeezed the back of Devon's left leg, indicating it was time to put Ito to work. Devon reached into his cargo pocket and pulled out a small Ziploc bag. Opening it up, he removed a piece of a dirty T-shirt belonging to Rafe he'd asked Annika for before they'd left Montana. He would have preferred to have one of Hannah's, but this was the best they could do. Putting the scent-infused clothing to Ito's nose, Devon whispered in German, "Revera," and opened the door. The entry was not even locked, once again raising the hair on the back of Reese's neck. Could this be an ambush? Too late for that, they were committed. Ito broke the threshold, Chavez entering immediately left, weapon up, ready to work. Devon went right, taking his corner and sweeping his rifle back just past the center of the room. Chavez was doing the same. Reese was right behind them, moving left to Chavez's side and taking the center of the room first. Clear. They didn't need to speak. Motions and instincts instilled from hundreds of raids and thousands of training exercises made the flow of clearing rooms second nature. Moving. Follow the dog. They moved past the foyer into the great room that was part dining area and part trophy room. Light was beginning to crack the horizon, but the nods were still the most effective way to penetrate the darkness. The remnants of a fire smoldered in an imposing stone fireplace. Ito tore through the game room. He'd alerted. Rafe was close. The assaulters followed Ito across the room, their movements smooth, natural, manhunters in their natural environment. Focused on the door at the far corner of the room, Reese subconsciously noted the animals that adorned the walls. He shot past a tiger rug in front of the fireplace, moving between a South American jaguar looking down from its perch across from a snow leopard on the opposite wall doing the same. A full-body polar bear guarded the doorway through which Ito led the team. A walrus was mounted just across from the majestic white Arctic beast. "Does this guy hunt anything that's not endangered?" Reese thought. "What an asshole." They followed Ito through the door and into a narrow stone staircase leading into darkness. Reese gave the squeeze and the foursome started to descend, Chavez leading the way, Ito right behind. Reese was last in line, keeping his rifle pointed up toward the door behind them. The stairs terminated in a locked steel door. Ito had clearly alerted on it, and Reese prayed that Hannah was with her brother on the other side. Reese gave Chavez the signal to breach. Ordinarily, they would explosively breach it from the top of the stairs, using the thick walls as protection from the overpressure. In this case, breaching charges were conspicuously missing from the loadout. Chavez slung his weapon and reached behind him for the hooligan tool. Studying the inward opening door, he cursed to himself, wishing he'd brought along the sledge. But when a small band of operators invade a country from 35,000 feet, you can only bring so much. Reese, Ito, and Devon backed up a couple of steps to give Chavez room. Whoever was on the other side would know well in advance that they were coming. In a hostage scenario, that was the last thing you wanted. They were giving up the advantage of surprise. Once the door was ajar, they doubled down on violence of action. Chavez inserted the huli into the jamb and, using its claws, started to pry. The door was solid. The rock wall into which it was built was not. Identifying the weakness, Chavez attacked the area where the locking mechanism met the wall. The stone began to crumble. After a minute, the entrance began to give way. Chavez seized the opportunity and turned the tool around, slamming the duckbill, designed to ram, into the lock again and again. The noise reverberated up the stairway, steel meeting steel. Chavez grunting with exertion as he gave the effort everything he had. One final swing and the door flew open on its hinges. Chavez flattened himself against the wall, making room for Devon, Reese, and Ito to make entry. Devon went left and Reese hooked around to the right, clearing his corner and sweeping back past the center of the room. Silence.
"Clear right," Reese whispered. "Clear left," Devon confirmed.
"Wait, what the—" Reese said aloud. "Belay that." Ito had sprinted to the end of the room and was barking at the wall. Only, it wasn't. What had at first appeared to be a wall under the alien illumination of the nods was, in fact, a series of bars, and not just bars, prison cells. The three operators read the room as a professor of literature would a classic novel. They pushed down the left wall, covering the cells with their weapons, sweeping back and forth across the uncleared area.
"Movement. Hold fire," Reese commanded. "I'm hitting the light. Stand by. Moving."
"Move,"
Chavez said. Reese took a few steps into the center of the room, flipped up his nods, and pulled down on a string attached to a single light bulb. The room was sparse, rock floor and walls, solid wood beams across the ceiling. 8 prison cells were built against the opposite side of the room. The three commandos kept their weapons trained on the unknown, quickly processing the scene. 8 cells. 6 occupied. 2 unoccupied. No Rafe. No Hannah. The prisoners all huddled in the back corners of their cells, trying to determine if the new intruders were friends or foes.
"Chavez, Devon, clear the rest of the house with Ito. I think it's empty, but make sure. Then, Devon, you switch out with Eli. I need him in here ASAP. Take up security with Ito. I'm going to see what intel I can get from these guys. Eli and I will prep them to move. We can't leave them here. We have to assume reinforcements are inbound. This time, it's not going to be a few contractors. It's going to be a full-on Russian military response. Take these prisoners to extract. They might be the only witnesses to what's happened here, and if this goes public, we will need them to keep us off the noose."
"Hey, boss," Chavez said from the far end of the room. The change in his tone was chilling. He was standing by a table that had been moved in front of the last cell, a cell that was now empty. A large glass jar, almost the size of a water cooler jug, was on top. Reese walked toward it, a sense of dread building the closer he got. Knowing what it was, even before he stopped, he knelt down and came face to face with Hannah Hastings.
"What are you going to do?"
Chavez asked. Reese felt the hate welling up from the deepest recesses of his soul. He looked from Hannah's upturned eyes to those of his friend and teammate.
"I'm going hunting."
Chapter 80. Reese ran in snowshoes, finding his rhythm, the Eccles Legend rifle cradled in his grasp. He had reloaded with 4 rounds in its magazine and a 5th in the chamber. 5 additional rounds on its cheek pad gave Reese quick access to more ammunition and put his eye at the optimal height behind the scope. He'd traded his battlefield pickup for his bolt-action Eccles because he wanted a tool he was comfortable with if he had to make a long shot. According to the African prisoners in Zharkov's dungeon, the Russian hunter and his accomplice had started tracking Rafe when it was still dark, which meant he had at least a 2-hour head start. In all likelihood, Reese would have to even up that distance with a bullet. He'd thought the team might mutiny when he told them he was forging ahead without them. He'd convinced them that with his sniper rifle and with only 2 targets still in play, he was best equipped to handle them. Reese stressed that they needed to get back to Farkas, and it would take the 3 of them to move him to extract. 2 would carry the wounded SEAL, and 1 would be on security, while also accounting for the Africans. They'd have to rotate positions as they maneuvered overland to the Albatross and Freedom. While all that was true, Reese also knew that anyone who stayed was probably not leaving the island. Going after Rafe and Alexander meant
They would surely miss the extract window. He couldn't live with the deaths of more of his friends and teammates on his conscience. He would continue alone. Reese had dropped most of his gear for added mobility. He needed to move. His half-face Hunter Skinner and Winkler SAOC R&D Hawk were on his belt. A SIG P320 compact was in a Blackpoint tactical wing holster at his side. The path was easy to follow. The tracks were from a four-wheel drive built to crawl over the snow and rock-strewn landscape. The snowshoes kept him from potholing into the deeper patches of snow as he gained elevation. His labored breathing and the howling wind all but eliminated his sense of hearing. Dawn had broken to an overcast sky. It would be snowing soon. He had to catch up with Rafe and Alexander before the weather closed in, concealing their tracks. The jar containing Hannah's head was seared into Reese's memory. The man responsible was at the end of the trail. It was time for him to die. Reese's peripheral vision caught a blur of white to his right. On instinct born of a warrior's DNA, he pivoted and threw up his left arm to block his face, the dog's teeth sinking into the fabric of his jacket and piercing the skin beneath. Dog! Losing his balance on the snowshoes that had just turned from an asset into a liability, he dropped his rifle and spun the massive canine around into the snow. The primal growls of the beast so close to his face flipped a switch in the former commando. His 5-meter target had just become this animal intent on killing him. Forcing the dog down in the powder, Reese took the mount position and fired a palm strike against his own arm, slamming his radial bone deep into the dog's mouth to take away the jaw's mechanical advantage and prevent it from shredding his arm to pieces. Having been taught to defend against dogs bred and trained to kill, Reese shot a second palm strike into its sensitive nose before going for his pistol. With his arm blocking the dog's face, Reese raised the SIG toward its brain. The thrashing animal was not accustomed to being on its back, which made an accurate shot difficult even at contact distance. To prevent a pistol stoppage from the mess that the animal's hair, skin, and bones were about to cause, Reese braced his thumb on the back plate and fired one round into its head, ignoring the instantaneous ringing in his ears from the close shot. Reese pushed clear and struggled to get the awkward snowshoes back under him while attempting to clear his self-induced malfunction from the contact shot. Before he could rack the slide, the second dog hit him in the ribs, sending the SIG into the snow. Fuck! How many dogs do these guys have? As Reese reoriented toward his newest threat, he had another chilling thought. Where is his handler? Reese adjusted to the new larger dog and tried to rip the snowshoes off his feet. The dog lunged, its sharp teeth finding purchase near Reese's collarbone, ripping with its head but coming away with only bits of jacket. With one snowshoe now free, Reese swung it at his new aggressor, the terrain and the animal's power keeping the seal on his knees as it charged in again. Grabbing for anything he could, Reese pushed one arm into the dog's muscular chest and wrapped his hand around its left leg. Feeling the teeth sink into his shoulder, Reese remembered the weakest part of a multipurpose canine. He grabbed the animal's front legs and snapped them apart like a wishbone, breaking the dog's base. Its primal bark instantaneously became a painful whimper. Rolling around as he would a human on the jiu-jitsu mats, Reese clinched its head and wrapped his arm around its neck, putting it in an anaconda choke. The dog thrashed and pawed in desperation before depleting the last measure of its strength and going limp in Reese's arms. Falling to his back, Reese sucked in precious oxygen. He took stock of his injuries while noting how much longer it took to choke out a dog than a human. The handler, I need to find my SIG. Reese scrambled to his feet, the one snowshoe still attached to his foot, making standing a tougher proposition than usual. Scanning the immediate area, Reese froze. A sound he knew all too well permeated the ringing in his ears, the sound of an action cycling on a bolt gun. He turned toward it and found himself looking at a huge man in skins and furs. He was holding a .300 Winchester Magnum. It was at his hip, pointing directly at Reese. Chapter 81.
Reese watched as the bear of a man ran the bolt, sending a cartridge into the snow. His face remained expressionless as he cycled the action once more, ejecting another round. He then moved the rifle to his shoulder. Click. Reese inadvertently flinched at what had just become the loudest sound in the world, a firing pin going forward on an empty chamber. The beast smiled as he turned the rifle around and, holding it by its barrel, swung it like a bat, letting it fly off into the snowy tundra. Reese dropped back to a knee, fumbling with the clasp on the snowshoe in a desperate attempt to free his foot, the monster slowing his approach, as if to give Reese time. The snowshoe free, Reese went for the blade at his belt, but was stopped by a spinning back kick which sent him careening into the ground, hitting his lower back on a rock hidden just beneath the fresh coat of snow. Who is this guy? A spinning back kick coming with such speed from a man of that size was not a good sign. He's comfortable here, Reese thought, getting back to his feet and shooting in for a double leg takedown. His opponent sprawled, then spun to take Reese's back, lifting him up until his hips were over his head, slamming him down like a rag doll. Reese's face met the snow, which luckily softened the impact.
Sambo, Reese thought. Russian military.
His opponent backed off, allowing Reese to start to stand.
He's toying with me.
The Russian then moved in with an agility Reese had not seen in years, taking Reese back down with a scissor sweep, then recovering in the mount position. Reese covered his face in a vain attempt to block the blows that rained down from above. He heard the Russian laugh, saying something in his native tongue that Reese couldn't understand. An image of Rafe's head in a glass container next to his sister's appeared in Reese's mind. Reese thrust his hips up, surprising the gigantic Russian and moving him forward. That move gave Reese the space he needed to draw his blade. Twisting up on his left side and scooting right, Reese plunged the sharp steel into the Russian's hip, then slammed his free hand into the back of the hilt to drive it in as far as possible. Writhing in pain, the Koryak warrior pushed Reese away, giving them both time to stand. A mutual respect for the fighting prowess of the other caused a slight tactical pause. His smile and laughter gone, the Russian drew a large skinning blade from his belt and watched as Reese's right hand moved behind his back, returning with his Winkler R&D hawk in a hammer grip, his left hand still holding Chavez's gift. Both men knew only one of them was leaving this desolate patch of terrain alive. The sharp weapons felt at home in Reese's hands, the grips designed to offer a hold even when awash in the blood of enemies. The two fighters moved toward each other, the Russian using his reach to his advantage, attempting to slash at Reese's stomach. The American anticipated the move. Reese's short blade connected with the larger man's arm, drawing a superficial wound. Reese used his momentum to swing the tomahawk at the Russian's head. Sergei evaded by swaying left, ready to press the attack. Recovering from his missed swing, Reese bent his knees to change levels and hooked his axe behind his target's ankle. He yanked back, sweeping the Russian off his feet. Capitalizing on his dominant position, Reese rushed in to destroy his opponent, but the Russian threw up his feet and used them along with Reese's momentum to throw the smaller man over his head.
This is why you train, Reese. Push the offensive, capitalize on his first mistake, and kill him.
The native Siberian closed the distance and re-entered with a massive downward slash. Reese blocked it by striking his attacker's forearm with the shaft of the tomahawk, and in a move he'd learned studying the Filipino martial arts, hooked his opponent's arm with the beard of the weapon, swinging it down and away. The violent motion ripped his tomahawk down his opponent's arm and through his knife hand in a move known as disarming the snake. Sensing the Russian was both surprised and off balance, Reese swung his left hand around and planted his blade squarely in the large man's clavicle. Reese moved off center line and swept the